Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Thursday. Yes, we're loaded. Aaron Jones, Russell Wilson stopping by, Stephon Diggs. Live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. Such a pleasure to be here today. Greg Cosell, 1 hour from now, too. He didn't play, but he has more great stuff on NFL games. He'll break down the Super Bowl, and it is just a pleasure to be here. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, I had a melatonin last night. I woke up this morning. I was still groggy. I slept 9 hours last night, and I literally was driving to work, and I'm like, did I pass the exit where I go here? Sometimes I'm not into drugs, but I like melatonin. I may have to scale back on that, Joy.
You got
to
be careful with that stuff during the week. You're loading up on Red Bull. It's Super Bowl week. We got a lot of people to talk to.
I do. Let me start with this new rule on the show. Our new rule on the show. If an athlete is aging, but he's not talking about retirement, then we are not going to talk about his retirement. Drew Brees, he talked about for a couple years his retirement. Brett Favre talked about his retirement forever. Big Ben, 6 years ago, was talking retirement. Philip Rivers talked retirement. So it's fair game. Tom Brady is not only talking retirement. He was asked yesterday a question before a Super Bowl, and he said, you know, I think we're going to be way better next year. Do we have the bite from Tom Brady? This is Tom Brady. When asked about a Super Bowl question, he pivots to next year.
I want to improve and get better, and I think next year is going to be a lot better than this year. You know, I feel like I'll be in a much better place mentally. I'm going to train a lot better this year. Physically, next year I'll be in a better place, so... I know as soon as this game ends, we're on the next season.
He's not quitting. Stop talking about it. Stop asking questions. If the player's not talking about it, they have no intention of it. I mean, you've known people in your life, your dad, your grandpa, your dad's friends, their insurance agents. They're like 62. They're over it. They're going to sell their company. You know somebody's worked at a factory for years and they're counting down the clock. And Tom is headed to a Super Bowl, asked a question, and pivots to, we're going to be way better next year. I'm not going to talk about his retirement. Listen, it kind of sounds ridiculous, right? They're going to be better next year. Well, there's no question they are. Think about this. Number one, he had a new offense for the first time in 20 years with no training camp. Okay. Leonard Fournette got there right before the season. Antonio Brown got there right in the season. And Tristan Wirfs, with no preseason, was a rookie at right tackle. The schedule's much easier. Remember, they're a wild card team. They don't play a number one schedule. No Kansas City Chiefs, no Green Bay Packers, and they face the NFC East. And add this, every quarterback's better second year in a system. Here's another big break for the Buccaneers. Is that Green Bay and Seattle are two of their big obstacles. We would admit that. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. Well, let's talk about Seattle. Oh, Matt Stafford's now in their division twice a year. And Kyler Murray's getting better. Seattle's road is tougher in division. What about Green Bay? Oh, they have a number one schedule. Oh, by the way, they got a bad break. They face the NFC West. So they got to face Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona, and the Rams. And they also face the AFC North. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and improving Cincinnati. So it's very likely that Tampa Bay will be a number one seed. And I think certainly this morning, all of you would acknowledge they're going to win the division. Carolina's still in a rebuild. Atlanta's kind of in a rebuild. And New Orleans has no Drew Brees, not sure who's going to be quarterback, and way the hell over the cap. So they're going to move pieces. Add the fact that Jason Light, the general manager for the Bucs, unlike Belichick, is a great draft weekend guy. He has hit home run after home run in the draft. Listen, I know all you Brady haters don't want to hear this, but he signed a 2-year deal. and they are a mile ahead of where we thought they would be. They're ahead of the plan. They're one of four rosters in the NFL, maybe three. They don't have a hole. I looked at mock drafts last night on Tampa. Their first pick, it's a defensive lineman. Their defensive line's already amazing. That's just more icing on the carrot cake. It's like they don't need it. They're literally at a surplus of talent at key positions. They don't have a need. They just draft best dude available. And that is a luxury about three teams in the NFL have. Even the Colts' excellent roster, they got to get another receiver. And that's an excellent roster. Even the Chargers' excellent roster, they got to draft a left tackle. Even the Rams' excellent roster, they could use a speed receiver, and I'd go on the defensive line again. So I'm just not going to talk about retiring for players when they don't talk about it. Breeze did, Favre did, Ben does, so I do. Philip Rivers does, so I do. Basketball players, Michael Jordan hinted at it, I will. LeBron's not, Brady's not, I'm not. Okay, so the Deshaun Watson stuff just cracks me up. It just cracks me up. You know, I've said this before. What do we want our athletes to be and what do we want our athletes to do? So now Deshaun Watson, he's got ex-players ripping him. He's got ex-coaches ripping him because he wants out of the dysfunction of Houston. Brett Favre, his latest comment, he gives us about one beauty every two, 3 weeks, a gem a month from Brett. So he doesn't like what Deshaun's doing. Let's play the tape. Do we have that?
Old school. I think you play, you get paid a ton of money to do a certain job and just do it and let the chips fall where they may. I think we make too much money to voice an opinion, but I'm not saying he's wrong. I think it's a different day and time, and it'll be interesting to see how the organization handles it.
Yeah, the difference, of course, is that at the end of Brett Favre's career in Green Bay, he was the only unstable thing. The team was stable. The players were stable. The roster was stable. Favre was the unstable part of it. He didn't want to learn a new offense. He got increasingly needy. He didn't help Aaron Rodgers grow. He threatened retirement. He didn't want to go to training camp. Favre was the unstable part of the Packers. Deshaun's the opposite. He's the only stable part of the dysfunctional Texans. So Brett Favre's opinion on this is nonsense. And this is not to pick on Brett Favre. Brett was the needy part of Green Bay at the end. Deshaun's the only thing not needy in Houston. But let me ask this question again. What do you want the athletes to do? So Matt Stafford says, get me out of Detroit after years of 5-11 and 6-10 and getting the hell beat out of him. And he goes to the Rams, and none of you say a peep. You congratulate Matt Stafford. You're happy for him. So do you want Deshaun Watson? What you're telling me is you want Deshaun, because they were awful this year, 4-12. You want him to have about six more of these, get the hell beat out of him, then go somewhere, and you're going to be like, that's how you do it. Maybe Deshaun, because he was in the same division as Andrew Luck, thinks to himself, Andrew Luck kept quiet. Andrew Luck always said the right thing. Andrew Luck was a nice guy. Andrew Luck had the support. But Andrew Luck had to retire. We watched a guy let the organization trample him and always take the nice way out. He's out of football, Andrew Luck. He's out of football. We watched Matt Stafford be a team guy and a nice guy and never threaten to leave. And he was irrelevant for the last decade as an unbelievable talent, according to most scouts. Eli Manning said, I'm not going to the Chargers. And he didn't get pushback. What do you want Deshaun Watson to do? You want him to be Andrew Luck and out of the sport? You want him to be Matt Stafford and irrelevant for 30 years or 20 years or 10 years? Is that what you're looking for? Don't we want star quarterbacks to have a good coach and a good team like Mahomes? You do get if Mahomes was in Jacksonville, this would not be what Mahomes looks like. You do get that Andy Reid, Brett Veach, the GM, the Hunt family, the offense. You do get, as much as I like Mahomes, it's helped a lot to escalate, to elevate the journey, to expedite it, to, you know, no roadblocks, no stumbling, park the Mercedes, here's the keys. We want more Mahomes. We want less Stafford. We want less Andrew Luck. Dick Vermeil's ripping him. He should just be quiet. And, you know, just here's the contract. And what are you talking about? I ask this all the time. What do you want athletes to do? Did you want LeBron James to stay in Cleveland after 7 years and they couldn't get him an all-star? You didn't watch the Miami stuff? You didn't watch the Lakers? You didn't watch the Kyrie LeBron in Cleveland? We would have none of that if it was up to a lot of GMs and former quarterbacks. You just take a job, stay there with crappy coaches, bad owners, lousy GMs, and just deal with it. I wouldn't. Why do you think I've changed jobs? I wouldn't. Why should an athlete? I have a 35-year career. They get 10. But Deshaun has looked in division at Andrew Luck be the nice guy, and it ended his career. He watched Matt Stafford be the nice guy and become irrelevant for over a decade. He's like, give him credit for being observant. I don't want any part of that. And he didn't do what Eli did, which is, I'm not going there. So now he's trapped in a terrible marriage. Anybody in a terrible marriage should have the right to get out of it. All right. God, Brady. Leading another show with Brady. I got at least two or three more Brady leads the show before football season's over.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Rudy Gobert's a really good player for the Utah Jazz. Actually, probably the most underrated player in the league. He's a great player, great defensive player. He's tall. He's the ultimate rim stopper in the NBA, he and Giannis. And he was talking about LeBron James. And he said, listen, I don't let criticism get to me. He said, LeBron James is the most criticized player of our generation, and look what he's accomplished. And so he's saying, listen, if you can criticize LeBron James, of course people are going to criticize me. And it's funny about that because, you know, I've come to a point, and over the last 6 months, I have changed. Over the last 6 months, 50 million Americans thought COVID was a hoax, and 50 million Americans thought we had widespread voter fraud. I'm not going to argue with those people. There's a quarter of the country to a fifth of the country. I'm not interested in your opinion. Argue amongst yourselves. There was not widespread voter fraud. There's no hoax. I have a friend now, a dear friend, struggling with COVID. I'm not interested in arguing with you on social media. Talk amongst yourselves. If you don't get LeBron at this point, I'm not interested in your opinion. He's the best player. He's the most mature. He's the most mentally strong. He elevates everything. Michael Jordan couldn't win games with a second franchise. LeBron's winning titles with a third. He's more philanthropic than Michael. He's a better ball handler than Michael. He's a better passer than Michael. He's physically stronger than Michael. He's lasted longer than Michael. You can argue about who's better, but if you don't get him, I'm not interested. I mean, you got people that in America that think it was a hoax. My thing is, go ahead, think that. I'm not going to argue. Argue amongst your idiot friends. I'm not interested in it. And it's like, if you want to beat up LeBron for the decision, it was 10 or 11 years ago. Live through the rearview mirror. If you want to beat him up for his comments about China, folks, it's a $2 billion business in China for the NBA. GMs got in trouble. The commissioner got in trouble. Coaches got in trouble. Everybody was walking on eggshells. LeBron doesn't think China's better than us. You want to nitpick? Here's what I find tedious. Arguing with people not worth arguing with and nitpicking superstars. I find it tedious. If you don't get LeBron and what he's done, argue amongst yourselves.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Russell Wilson's joining us live. These puppies are incredible. Are you wearing those right now?
I'm rocking them, Colin. Yeah, obviously, I see you got the hookup. We were able to send a bunch of those, not just to you, but a whole bunch of healthcare workers today.
Oh, good.
Which is pretty cool. So, you know, Bose and I have been partnering to really try to make a difference. And we gave them some pretty cool, you know, a big old box kit just to say, hey, thank you for all you've been doing. And give them some Super Bowl merchandise and a lot of fun. And local businesses, too, we've been rewarding, too. So, you know, you're set up there. It looks like you and Joy are all set up there.
We're doing well. So let's go back to your first Super Bowl. You know, I was talking to Troy Aikman the other day, and he said, you know, he goes, I didn't sleep very well before a lot of games. He goes, the night before the Super Bowl, I slept great. He goes, I thought this is easy. He goes, then I ran out of the tunnel. He goes, I don't remember anything for the next 30 minutes. I was just like, oh. So go back to your Super Bowls. You've always been a great pressure player. But go back to the first quarter of both your Super Bowls. Is it different, Russell? Are there more nerves than usual?
I think you have your natural feelings, but honestly, the best part of the game, I've always told people this, is going out for the coin toss. I was fortunate to be captain that year, and me and Heath and Big Red, we went out for the coin toss. And meanwhile, Peyton Manning and Champ Bailey and all these guys were walking across the other side, and they did the coin toss. Hey, welcome the AFC champs, you know, the Denver Broncos. You know, welcome the Seattle Seahawks. It's a lot louder, obviously, with the Seahawks. And then fast forward, you put this the ref gives the coin toss. He gives the coin toss to Joe Namath, and he's going to do the coin toss. And all right, we got cool Joe here to do the coin toss. And sure enough, he flips the coin, but I haven't said heads or tails yet. So that kind of cool calmed my nerves. And Joe leans in. He goes, "Hey Wilson, I always had a quick release." You know, and so I knew it was going to be a good night that night just from the jump.
Yeah, that by the way, that game was over rather quickly, and you were sensational. So when you, it's funny because you face Manning and then you face Brady, and it when you face Tom, did Pete Carroll talk a lot that week about, okay, game's not going to be over. Tom's a legend in the second half. Did it feel different facing Brady? I mean, you're on the other sideline of the greatest quarterback ever. Was that in your head? Did you think about it?
No, you know, I think going up against Peyton, how well our defense played the year before, that was amazing, obviously. And we were able to win that game in such great fashion. I think, you know, playing this game, you know, the second time we went to the Super Bowl, we were actually up, I think, by 14 or so.
Yeah.
Late in the game. But our guys started, our defensive guys, you know, we had a few guys go down and get injured. So that, you know, and he just made his plays, you know, they made our plays. And then unfortunately, we didn't make that last play at the end, but we had our chances throughout the game. And so, you know, it's football. It's part of the game, you know. And so, you know, I think that, you know, obviously going against Tom to see him, what he's doing, obviously, I think it's 10th Super Bowl, him leaving the Patriots, being in Tampa, be with Bruce Arians and all the weapons he has around him, how the guys are doing for him and the defense and how great the defense is. But obviously, Tom's, you know, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And so it's going to be a great matchup to see this game for sure.
You know, Joy and I have said this before. LeBron and Brady are the most committed athletes we've ever seen. And Joy and I have said, you're in the class now, the money you spend on your body. And people could look at Brady, LeBron, and you and think, gosh, Russell has no fun. He's just doing sit-ups and drinking water all day, and it's committed. How do you balance, Russell, being committed and then being having a big life and a husband and father? Because you are one of those rare, you're spending seven figures a year on your body, on the quarterbacking. Is it a tough balance?
Well, I think that the huge part of it is it's got to be a lifestyle. You know, this life is you got to be, it's got to be a lifestyle. You got to be fully committed to it every day. You study habits, the way you work, the way you prepare, you know, everything else. Obviously, you know, I have a whole performance team and everything else, but really also what goes into it is the mindset. You know, I'm a big believer in the mindset. If you guys ask guys like Tom, LeBron, those guys, myself, you know, it's about the mindset too. And it's, you know, preparing and investing in that part of it too, as well. So that's been a big part of it for my career, you know, to really sustain success. And how do you do it year in and year out? And then, you know, ultimately I want to play another 10, 15 years. So, you know, I've been thinking about that daily, every day. And you have a whole plan for that. And so, you know, for me, it's the obsession with winning. It's the obsession with the process. You got to love the process more than the end result. And you got to be able to, you know, focus on championships and winning championships. And so all of that together is something that I've been really passionate about and really care about every day. And You know, to be honest with you, you got to sit up in the front of the room and take notes. You got to keep highlighting. You got to keep studying. You got to keep learning.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've always dedicated my game to.
You know, I said it this year, listen, I'm from the Northwest, and so a lot of my friends, my family are Seahawk fans, and I said I did feel at the end of this year that the offense was predictable, and I thought it needed a change, and I thought you're not giving Russell the support he needs. And I said that, and DK Metcalf came out about a week ago and said, listen, man, people kind of – they figured us out. You always keep your head high. You're never negative. That's just not your – that's not your jam. That's not who you are. But was there a point this year, Russell, in the middle of it, where you felt like we got a lot of good players here? We're not challenging ourselves. We're not challenging others. Did you ever feel that?
Well, I think the thing for us was, you know, we had such an electric, amazing start at the beginning of the year. I mean, we were able to do everything. We went for it every game, every play, every possession, everything else. We had some bumps in the road. I could have played better. I should have played better. I can do my part too. Obviously as well. And I think what happened though was that, you know, we had several guys go down up front. We, you know, we didn't have our starters necessarily and everything else, but also, as our defense continued to play better, that's time for us to really take off and to keep going and to keep, you know, preparing at the highest level. And so that's something that we really wanted to be able to do, throughout the rest of the season. Unfortunately, we didn't go for it as much. I don't think, I think we got a little bit passive, and we got to make sure that never happens again. We got to make sure that we do everything we can, to, like I said, to be playing this Sunday. I mean, that's what it takes. We got great players in it. We got our best players. We got to let it go and go forward and everything else. And I think on offense, we didn't adjust, you know, great throughout those tough. You know, we had a couple games where we could have adjusted better. You know, that was last year, you know, and I think that ultimately, you know, this offseason is really about, you know, how can I be the best version of myself, and across the board. And I think ultimately, like I said, you know, and, my mindset's, you know, we should be playing today, you know, or I should say this weekend. And so I think that's really what matters most to me when I wake up every day, every morning, you have that itch.
So when you've been in a couple of Super Bowls, I mean, you've played in Rose Bowls and big games and all that stuff. But when you're in a Super Bowl, every play is just bigger. It's going to frame your legacy. That's the reality of it. How do you, when you get into these, again, you've played in so many big games, but in the Super Bowl, I can remember so much about that Super Bowl, that throw up the sideline right before, you know, the end of the game. How do you keep your anxiety down? Like you come out of the tunnel, you're amped up. How do you not overthrow the ball? End of game, you're tired. How do you not force stuff? Super Bowl, massive pressure. Where do you go? Because I never sense it with you. I think you play better from behind than with a lead. I think you play better in the fourth than in the first. How do you get there? Where does your mind go?
I think, first of all, pressure is a privilege. You know, and for me, you know, I try to remain neutral. I try not to get too high. I try not to get too low. I try to be in the middle of the moment. I try to embrace the moment. I think sometimes some people fear the moment. I look forward to the moment. And that's something that I've always been dedicated to. It's something that I've always visualized since I was a young kid. And I've had tons of people tell me I couldn't do this. I can't do that. I won't do that. And, you know, so I'm used to overcoming, you know, I'm an overcomer by nature. And I think that ultimately, you know, I'm grateful that God's given me the opportunity to play this game and do what I love to do. I think that you have to have winning habits. You know, success doesn't just happen by accident. You know, you have to have winning habits every day. Like I said, it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle choice and what you do and how you think about things. And in the midst of the moment, like I said, I look forward to those moments.
I love watching this Super Bowl stuff. My sister didn't even like sports, and now she's a huge Seahawks fan because of you. When you go back and you look at those, look at that, Russell, you're on the sideline against Denver. Was that the greatest? I mean, it was probably obviously the greatest sports moment in your life. Can you even go back there emotionally, what you were thinking during that?
Man, win it. You know, it's you hold up that trophy. It's such a gift, you know, and every day you wake up, you know, wanting to do that. Every day you wake up, just that itch, that urge to hold that trophy up again. I think also that night I was thinking about my dad. You know, I was thinking about my dad, just how far he's helped me come, my mom. But my dad, you know, he's no longer living. So he wasn't able to see me in person there, but I believe that he was there with me. And so that was an emotional moment right there where I got to hold up the trophy and the gift of that. And so got to do it more. You got to hold up more trophies because it's such a special thing. But it takes so much hard work and belief and everything else. And so, I'm excited to be able, hopefully, able to do that again one day.
You know, it's interesting. I've been defending Deshaun Watson for the last couple of days, and I've said, listen, these athletes don't get very long. And so Matt Stafford, he kept quiet and didn't talk about it, but for 10 years he lost a bunch of games, and Andrew Luck didn't fire back, and he got so physically beat up, he had to retire. And so I've said with Deshaun Watson, if you believe you don't have support, you should say something. You should just say, hey, you're lucky, you've had a very good coach, and you're always a team guy. But now, Russell, you are the franchise. Do you feel sometimes now going forward, your next 7-8 years, that there's going to be moments you're going to have to confront the GM or confront the coach and say, guys, this doesn't sit well with me. By the way, you guys have a new offensive coordinator. Did you give an opinion on that? Did you say, listen, we're stale? Do you feel you have a need to do that or a right to do that now?
Well, I think on the offensive coordinator front, that's Coach Carroll's decision. He makes that decision and everything else in terms of, Shoddy. I think Shoddy has been a great coach. He's now in Jacksonville and everything else. And I really enjoyed my time with Schottenheimer and who he was and the coach that he was. But, in terms of the next offensive coordinator and us deciding on Shane, I was very adamant that, we needed to have a mixture of all the different things that we can do. And when our offense continue to progress, continue to grow and continue to challenge and everything else. And so I think Shane definitely brings that to the table. Hopefully he can really help us with that. I've had some great dialogue with him over this past several days. I just got off the phone from earlier too as well. And so I think that's really important throughout this journey. I think, for the next 10 plus years of my career, my mindset's on one thing, that's winning more championships. And so it's such a critical thing that, like you mentioned, the legacy of it all and how you want to leave this game, I think is really important too. And I'm obsessed with the process and I'm obsessed with the winning part of it all too. And, hopefully we're able to do that.
All right. Bose headphones, use them. The 700s, they're great for conference calls, video chats. First of all, I don't look good in hats and I don't look good in headphones. So do not judge them how I look. Judge them how Russell Wilson looks, which is stellar. They just gave a bunch to healthcare workers. You're a credit to the game, my man. I love talking to you, Russell. Thank you.
God, it's always a pleasure, man. Grateful for you. And keep going, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Russell Wilson. All right.
See you there.
Go Hawks.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
NFL merchandise came out. Brady's number one in the NFL. So Tampa's the number one market for him selling merchandise. Like Boston's number two or three. New York's up there. Orlando, Miami. So Tom is still selling a lot of merch up in Boston, his old stomping ground. And he still has nice things to say. Yesterday he was talking about the Patriots and what a good time it was. And here's Tom Brady talking about his past, and it just has such warm feelings about it.
Obviously, anytime you change teams, you don't know how it's going to go. But I think there's been incredible support that I've had from, for the team I used to play for, all the New England fans. And, I still obviously have a great affection for New England. And, I said the other day, my kids were born in Boston. So, I have a lot of love for Boston and all of New England and the incredible support over the years. It was an amazing two decades of my life.
Am I the only person, and maybe I am, but the Patriots now with Brady feels like a long time ago. They're irrelevant. Tom's going to be the only guy that gets two statues, one in New England, one in Tampa. They're irrelevant. They're so bad and Tom's so good, they don't matter. And remember this, and we kind of predicted this. We said, in Boston, the Patriots aren't the Celtics or the Red Sox. They're not even the Bruins. Those teams, Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, the Red Sox history, the Celtics, Bill Russell, those teams were dominant in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Even if the Red Sox weren't winning titles, they were such a part of the sport. I'm a kid that grew up in Seattle. In the 70s, here comes Freddie Lynn and Jim Rice. and Louis Tiant and Carlton Fisk. Like, the Red Sox were a draw then. In the 80s, they were better than the Yankees. That's never been the Patriots. The Patriots were a mess forever. The stadium was a mess. Didn't make any money. Miami, you know, was the team on the coast, or it was Pittsburgh, or it was the Giants. I mean, they were a mess forever before Tom Brady. Parcells was good for about 45 minutes, but he left. Pete Carroll came in. That didn't work. That's why they've never had any sustained success without Brady. Hell, Belichick couldn't win the year before Tom started, and he couldn't win the year after he left. I just don't think New England ever understood in the moment how much of this, how transformative Tom was as a personality. Do you know there are 123 professional sports franchises in America? Tampa Bay had the worst winning percentage of all of them, and they're in the Super Bowl. The Patriots are just not a relevant franchise. They never were. The Celtics, even in down years, you can feel them lurking. When the Red Sox are down this past year, they're rebuilding, they'll be back. The Bruins have always been good on analytics. They're always around the playoffs. They feel relevant. New England was a mess. They had a messy stadium deal. They almost went to Hartford. They were quirky. They were weird. They had that Razor guy owned them for a while. Remember that Remington guy or something? Just a mess. And then Parcells said, get me out of here. And Pete Carroll couldn't work. And I think New England never understood. Not that they understood Tom was great, but when you're not historically relevant and then you suddenly get relevant, you can talk yourself into, we something here. We good. We special. New England's not. Patriots aren't. We're not. My whole life. When I was a kid, never talked about the Patriots. When I was a young kid, when I was starting to love football, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, it was Steelers, Raiders, Miami Dolphins. And then as I got older in high school and stuff, oh, the Broncos started getting good. The Steelers were still good. Yeah, 49ers were getting good. Oh, and I got a little older in my 20s, 30s. Oh, here come the Cowboys with Jimmy Johnson. And the Niners are good again. Giants, oh, watch out with the Giants, Parcells. And then, you know, we've segued. There was never a moment before Brady took over the starting job where the Patriots were a national team. Ever. I mean, Packers were invisible for 25 years until they got Brett Favre. What do you think the Patriots were? So it is, it's the only game 1 year removed, the only national TV game this year New England will be invited to is the one where they host Tom Brady. He'll be on 10 of them. They'll be on one, the one Tommy comes back to beat Belichick.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, Dolphin quarterback, joining us live from Mountain Dew. He has started for 8 different teams. No quarterback in league history has ever done that. By the way, in a full disclosure, when Miami came to you this year and said, listen, we're starting Tua, and you came out, and it hurt. I could tell it hurt. And I said, God, Ryan Fitzpatrick's got to know better. And it was interesting. I got a lot of negative feedback. People are like, Coward, you're a jerk. He's a human being. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I am a jerk. It really did hurt you. It bothered you. And even though you're well-traveled, let's go back to that. You were pretty magical this year for them. And you shared, you know, listen, you felt injured. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, I know better than anybody the situation I was in. I said it early on in training camp. I was the placeholder until they thought Tua was ready to go. And that didn't make it any less hurtful when it happened.
Right.
And, you know, I want to be out there. I'm a competitor. And as I got older in this league, I'm able to say what I feel a little bit more. And that's how I felt. And I didn't try to take anything away from Tua or the team. And, you know, I accepted the role that they gave me and try to thrive in the role as his backup. And doesn't mean it didn't hurt not to be out there.
By the way, you're one of the better athletes in the NFL at quarterback, which cracks me up because everybody's like, oh, he's Harvard guy. He's Harvard guy. And I'm like, no, he's actually, you're one of the 5 or 6 great athletes that play quarterback. Do you still think sometimes guys underestimate how good you are running with a football?
Without a doubt. I mean, you see a 38-year-old with a dad bod back there. they don't even give me a chance. And they're not gonna sneak one or two runs during a game.
It is. You really are. You're a hell of a runner with a football, and you're tough. You take a lot of shots. First of all, it is a weird relationship, you and Tua. I like it. I get it. He's lucky to have you. But, like, right now, you're going to go into camp. You're going to battle. Has there ever been kind of a weird moment with Tua, ever?
Not really. I mean, part of it is the age difference. You know, I'm like, as old enough to be his grandpa, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it always has been the student and the teacher, you know, and he's done a great job of being willing to ask those questions. And, you know, I probably do too good of a job of offering advice. He doesn't need to listen to all of it. But, you know, there's no ego between either of us. And it really was a good relationship. You know, he came in willing to learn and worked his butt off. And that's pretty much all he needed from me, you know, to watch him work as hard as he did.
Tom Brady won't drink a beer during the season. He's lasted forever. You've lasted forever. What's your secret?
Yeah, we may be the opposite in that one. I definitely have the opposite diet and the opposite habits in that way. But, you know, my biggest thing has been belief in myself. I really do think so. And then, you know, in not being seriously injured, I think a lot of that has to do with luck too. But I'm very fortunate at the age of 38 to still be playing this game.
When did you know Brian Flores was good? Because he's clearly really good. When did you sense it, that he was special?
Well, you know, we started the year, I think, getting outscored his first season in those first four games by over 100 points or maybe even 140 points. And we got to 0-7. And I think it was right about then when, you know, he decided he was going to put his personality and his stamp on the football team. He started being more of himself, putting more of himself into practice and meetings in terms of his personality. And right there, I saw that he was going to be a special player. I mean, he's a young guy. He's 39 years old. He can really relate to the players. Players can relate to him and, you know, look at him and respect him. He has a great presence in the room. And I was really happy to see the success that he was able to generate this year with our team, you know, going 10-6 from a team that was called the worst team in the history of the NFL 2 years ago. He's done a great job and will continue to improve that organization.
You have seven kids. You're an NFL quarterback. That is not the easiest life to balance. How do you do it?
Oh, you have an amazing wife. I think that's one of the biggest things. And, you know, this year wasn't without challenges from anybody in any walk of life. And for us, you know, having my family lives in Tampa, so having a COVID test in Miami every day, I didn't really get to see them as much as I would have liked. So huge burden on her, but, you know, she did it with a smile on her face every day. So that helps me out a lot.
You love football. I can tell you love. I always say you look like if there was people were playing football on Thanksgiving in a family, you'd be the one guy in the family. You're like, yeah. Ryan was always a great athlete. He was so smart. He went to a good, but he could have played. Well, I watch you play. I see joy. I mean, literally you love football. How long, where's it come from and how long are you going to play?
I mean, physically, I feel great. I don't think that's going to be the thing that holds me back. You know, I think with my oldest entering high school and, you know, different responsibilities on that end, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think you're right. I mean, and I'm glad that that shows when I play the game. I truly love being out there with my teammates. I love trying to make guys better. I love trying to instill confidence in some of these young guys in hopes of bettering their careers. So, you know, that's why I want to continue to play. And that's why I really enjoyed my 16 years in the league. When I get out there, I do feel like a little kid, you know, running around and making plays.
By the way, Mountain Dew Major Melon Super Bowl commercial stars John Cena, going to give fans a real-time opportunity to win $1 million. I want you to go to lifechangingdew.com, lifechangingdew.com for details. I have a minute left before the show's over. You went to Harvard. Were you a good student? You liked your beer. Were you a party? What kind of Harvard student were you?
I would say I was a decent student, but I also enjoyed college, which I I would recommend to anybody, you know, do your best school, but make sure that you enjoy those 4 years.
Yeah, I did too, by the way. I was a decent student. It's just, I went to Eastern Washington University. You went to Harvard. Life.
That was my only scholarship offer, Eastern Washington. My only scholarship offer coming out of high school. Tim Rosenbaugh.
I know him.
Yeah.
The hell? It's amazing. I literally, my mind just got blown. You should have gone there, by the way. It's the Harvard of the Palouse, Eastern Washington University.
I took a recruiting trip there.
Yeah, not much. Yeah, not much, by the way. Ryan Fitzpatrick, absolute pleasure. Good luck to you. Credit to the game.
Thank you. What? Now-